Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and senior market analyst at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar Eltzrai, our U.S. Director of Research. Together, we'll share the latest news and trends in the U.S. commercial real estate market. Omar, it's great to be with you.
Glad to be here.
Looks like we got a lot to cover on the podcast. What's on today's list of topics?
So we had a pretty packed week last week. So we'll run through an overview of some of the Fed news. Then we'll touch on a number of the macro releases and check in on the markets, touching on fixed income, equities. We'll even do a little bit of commodities and see where the REITs are as well. And then we'll do a recent retail chain closures and downsizing. This is a piece that, Cole, I know you focused on and have looked into. And then we'll close it out with some of the items that we're looking forward to digesting later this week.
All right. Sounds good. What do you want to get into first?
Sure. It was a really packed week last week in terms of news and speeches coming out from the Fed. But I would say the possibly most anticipated and digested nugget of news from the past week was the release of the April 30th to May 1st FOMC meeting minutes, which really drove home the higher for longer narrative, as the minutes really confirmed that many of the members of the FOMC view inflation as taking longer to tame than they had previously expected, and that multiple of the voting members were open to additional hikes if needed. Now, I'm not saying that they were putting hikes back on the table and back on the calendar, but it's not a unique opinion amongst the FOMC members that if inflation does not come down, that they would consider hikes if needed. But these views were really, and the meeting minutes, I would say, were really colored by many speeches that happened last week. So on Monday, you had Governor Christopher Waller and Vice Chair for Supervision, Michael Barr, as well as the Vice Chair, Philip Jefferson, give speeches. Then on Tuesday, Regional Fed President of the Cleveland Fed, Loretta Mester, gave a speech, as well as Governor Waller again spoke at the Peterson Institute. And Governor Waller was quite busy because he, on Friday, had another speech at the Reykjavik Economic Conference in Iceland. But across all of these speeches, the Fed officials really, they shared their current views on the economy and monetary policy. However, if I had to boil it down to really three things: one, they admitted that the initial estimates for how fast inflation would come down were off, right? They admitted that inflation was taking longer to cool than initially anticipated. Second, the speeches and the minutes really made observations on the current environment. Called attention to the fact that we are in a restrictive territory in terms of interest rates, but the speed of the transmission of that cool down of the higher rates through the economy is still really being assessed and understood. And then the third thing or theme that I thought the speeches and the minutes do is that there's really a need for more time as well as really more data before any sort of interest rate moves, whether that's up, hopefully not, or down, and any sort of cuts are going to be really decided upon. And so more time and more data will bring clarity to the situation. Cole, I know you were looking at many of the macro releases that did come out. What was the first one that caught your attention?
Yeah, I took a long look at some housing data last week. I think this is one of the particular data points that has clouded the view on interest rates, because whether directly because interest rates for purchasing housing are still elevated or because housing inflation is still very high. And so there was data last week on new and existing home sales. So the Census Bureau and Department of Housing and Urban Development released a joint report on single-family home sales or new single-family home sales that came out on May 23rd. So that release showed that new home sales declined 4.7% from the previous month, but also 7.7% from the previous year. And so they're now at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 665,000 sales. Those elevated mortgage rates are definitely constraining sales of existing homes. So a lot of that demand has been channeled into new home construction. But you're seeing that market slip a bit too. So it's no longer gaining any steam. April 2024 actually marked the first yearly decline in sales of new homes since February 2023. And this is one that I calculated on top of this, but the fraction of sales attributed to new homes did slip quite a bit from their recent peak. Its recent peak was 15% of the total sales, and now it's around 13.3% for April 2024. This probably isn't bad news to everybody because of the slimming construction pipeline for new homes. That demand is just going to get channeled into the multifamily and presumably some existing single family rental markets. So interesting stuff there on new sales or on new home sales. Existing home sales, that's a figure from the National Association of Realtors. So April data for that figure came out on May 22nd, so just the day before. I like those line up quite closely. And that showed that existing home sales did slip from March 2024, 1.9%, and the same amount actually from April 2023. So that showed existing home sales at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of a little over 4 million. The other thing that this release includes is pricing data. And so in April 2024, the median price of an existing home actually increased 5.7% on the year to just above $400,000. All four regions of the country, those that the NAR uses, Northeast, South, Midwest, and West, they did post price gains on the year. I think the story is pretty similar here. Elevated prices, low inventory, they're really just pushing folks into the multifamily sector. This is a sector we've covered on the podcast before, and we're not the first people to point this out, but it is grappling with some major growth in supply in select markets. You're seeing some year-on-year declines in rent growth. But if all this demand gets channeled in the multifamily sector, maybe you'll see a little bit of that kind of stem the bleeding in that sector. The other figure I looked at last week, this was related to manufacturing. So the durable goods orders data release. So this is the durable goods manufacturers, shipments, inventories, and orders data release from the Census Bureau. That's a monthly advance report. So they'll go back and correct the previous month's figures next month. They released this report on May 24th. So we saw that new orders for manufactured durable goods rose 0.7% month over month to a seasonally adjusted value of $284 billion. Orders did fall from 1 year ago, 0.9%. One reason we should probably look at this indicator, and one that you may not think of when you hear manufactured durable goods, is that one of the big categories of those goods is actually construction equipment. And so this is a good leading indicator of where the future economic environment is headed for something like construction. But also it's a direct demand driver for the industrial sector. And April 2024 actually represented the second yearly contraction in durable goods orders since 2020. So this is a market that, you know, this is a figure that's actually shown quite a bit of positivity in the future economic environment. But as a demand driver for industrial real estate, we are seeing this figure slip a little bit. So growth in spending is cooling. And so the effects may be felt directly in demand for warehouse space. So probably something we should keep an eye on. It's one of those figures where you might want to see if, you know, growth in spending is keeping up with inflation, but it looks like now the value is actually slipping on a yearly basis. And so should be interesting to see where this is felt in the rest of the economy. But I think you can give us a good idea of what's going on in some of the markets to shed some light on that. What were you taking a look at these last few weeks?
Sure. I wanted to do a quick check-in across the broader capital markets, across fixed income, equities. And I know that commodities are getting a little bit more play and a little bit more attention. So I just wanted to put some of these into context. So with all the news and releases from last week, yields on the benchmark interest rates and bonds for the week really notched up about 7 basis points. And that puts the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury security at 4.46 and the 5-year at 4.53. That's where they closed out last week. And where those interest rates are currently, that's about 50 to 60 basis points higher than at the start of 2024. Now, I'm speaking for the 10-year and the 5-year respectively, but both are right around that 75 basis points higher than where they were a year ago. Now, the higher bond yields from last week did weigh pretty heavily on equities. The broad market equity indices, those that are most cited, are quite concentrated. They're concentrated in sectors and specifically a handful of companies that were able to largely shake off a lot of that higher bond yield. And the broad market indices are still up around 10 to 11% year to date and about 25 to 30% over the last 12 months. That's speaking for broad-based equities market indices. The REITs are not quite in the same camp, as they finished last week down about 3%, and that puts them down about 7% year to date. And I guess silver lining is that they're actually up about 8% over the last 12 months. But real estate is still one of the sectors that doesn't necessarily have, you know, the growth that is really buoying certain sectors of equities and really allowing them to shake off these higher yields. Checking in on commodities, just because commodities have gotten a lot more attention recently. Part of that is due to geopolitics and geopolitical risk. But another big piece is that there's a bit more divergence that we're seeing across the globe in terms of economies and how the strength and their growth expectations, as well as central bank monetary policy. As that diverges, you're starting to see both oil, which often is tied heavily to overall economic growth, but then also gold really come into the mainstream commentary around how markets are performing. As of last week on all of the news, both oil and gold futures ended the week down, but both are between 10 to 13% up year to date. And ultimately, it's worth paying a bit more attention to going forward, as you'll see these really come into play much more and help describe what's happening as the economies and central banks diverge. But I know that we don't usually do that kind of broad cross asset class breakdown, but thought we'd give that a try. But heading into this week, I do know that all investor eyes will be on inflation data, which we'll touch on at the end of the call. But turning to CRE, Cole, I know that you recently have done a piece looking at retail chains and how they're adjusting their portfolios and their footprint. What do you have to share there?
I did want to call back to something you mentioned earlier. For those folks who do want to get that zoom in on REITs specifically, we've had a couple of recent episodes that shed some light on some individual sectors and companies. We did a REIT overview a few weeks ago, and then we just had a conversation with Ed Pierzak from NAREIT. So if folks want to zoom in on some of those individual sectors or companies, I'd encourage them to take a look at those other episodes. I did recently post a piece to the Altus website about retail kind of downsizing and portfolio right-sizing, but I didn't do this in a vacuum. There have been some recent stories touching on some similar topics. There is a Wall Street Journal piece just last week, or I guess on May 21st, about drugstores and pharmacies. So they're finally downsizing. That was the title was Real Estate Downsizing Finally Comes for Your Pharmacy. The story essentially was that drugstores and pharmacies were among the last categories of major retailers to downsize. It's discount competitors and e-commerce. And so there was some data from some other providers estimating that there have been about 3,000 pharmacies that have actually closed over the last 5 years. The kind of punchline to that particular story was that it's not all bad, because availability for standalone buildings, particularly those for pharmacies, was at all-time lows. And so these are tending to backfill quickly. Another story last week, this has made some serious waves across the restaurant world, but Red Lobster filed for bankruptcy. And so that was following an announcement of a couple of recent closures, and then they filed for Chapter 11 last week. So their executives, interestingly, credit the downfall of the chain to specific sale leaseback provision. It was an agreement they signed back in 2021 where they sold their underlying real estate and rented it back. Their executives now claim that this is that they've been renting the particular land at above the prevailing market rent. They've stated that they might have to close locations in the near future. But I bring all this up to say that a bit earlier than some of those recent pieces, I did a nice overview of the kind of recent retail trends. Some other chains who have hit turbulence, who are downsizing, they're outright liquidating, or they're spinning off, or just trimming down existing locations into smaller format stores. So I talked a little bit about how institutional capital in real estate is reacting to these trends. If chains are going small, you've seen institutional capital do the same. They're pivoting away from, say, the mall sector, which is really capital intensive, and towards higher value, smaller footprint shopping centers. Some data from NCREIF I took a look at, and the average size of a retail property owned by an institutional fund has reduced by nearly a third since 2000. But the average value of a property owned has actually tripled. And so you've seen a lot of this consolidation into, say, the grocery sector, a lot of these high foot traffic centers where the tenants actually take care of a lot of the maintenance and they have a symbiotic relationship as opposed to the like real science that is crafting malls. But I would say that a lot of these recent closures have not been all negative for institutional owners. They've been actually fairly successful at splitting up these anchor stores, replacing inline tenants. You've seen market to contract rent spreads actually, they're positive and they're increasing. And so replacing a lot of these stores that were there on long leases, say like drugstores, pharmacies, other big box locations we've seen close like Bed Bath & Beyond, they've actually been quite positive for institutional ownership of retail real estate. And this era of kind of elevated consumer spending that we've been in following the pandemic has really been a boon for these type of centers. But I actually also spoke recently with the Commercial Observer. There was an article I appeared in on May 21st about the grocery sector called Ace in the Hole, referring to Whole Foods, talking a little bit about how this sector is evolving, talking about some of the chains that are doing quite well in this elevated consumer spending environment. So I encourage folks to check that out. I think you may have to have a subscription because it was in the Commercial Observer magazine, but definitely encourage folks to check that out. I always love talking about the grocery sector. So really enjoyed talking to Patrick Sisson from Commercial Observer. I want to thank him for giving me the opportunity. But Omar, I know you've got a bunch of other stuff on your plate. And one of the things that we've just wrapped up is the industry conditions and sentiment survey. You want to share with folks kind of a teaser finding on that one?
Yeah. So I'm taking this back to the higher level and overall broader capital markets. It, just as we're really seeing both central bankers and investors really react to this higher for longer environment, the CRE market participants are doing the exact same, right? They're doing that as well. And so in our latest quarterly CRE industry conditions and sentiment survey, participants indicated that their expected equity returns are moderating slightly as the cost of debt is increasing slightly compared to the prior quarter. Respondents' 12-month forward view of all-in fixed rate financing increased moderately to a range of 6.7 to 7.3 percent across the main portfolio strategies that we ask them to identify as. That's core plus, value add, and opportunistic. And this is up about 35 basis points on average from the Q1 2024 survey results. This increase in debt costs or expected debt costs was accompanied by a decrease in their expected net returns to equity, which we measured by reported net levered IRRs. And the decrease in net levered IRRs was about 51 basis points on average compared to the prior quarter, right? So higher debt costs, lower IRRs. And the biggest shift we're really seeing in core plus and opportunistic strategies, which they saw net IRRs decrease quarter over quarter by 73 basis points and 81 basis points, respectively. Now, what I think notable here is that these shifts in CRE investor expectations really seem to mirror quite well with the broad capital market expectation shifts that we've seen across other asset classes. And I think it really does seem to reflect that the higher for longer narrative. I think we entered this year, everybody chanting higher for longer, but at the same time, I think longer means longer. And so I think we're living through that now. But this is just one of the pieces. You'll be able to see all the data, all the charts, and we are planning on releasing the full results for the second quarter CRE industry conditions and sentiment survey results around mid-June, so just a few weeks. But Cole, what else can folks look forward to maybe before mid-June?
Yeah, we've got the last remaining retailer earnings results coming through this week. As a reminder, these are delayed by a month because they like to include the holiday season in their first quarter or in their fourth quarter earnings. So they shift by a month. So we've got a bunch of big retailers coming by the time we will release the podcast. So Best Buy, Kohl's, Dollar General, and Costco will all be releasing their first quarter results this week by the 30th. So I'll be paying attention to a few of those and see if that can kind of tell us a little bit more about what's going on in the retail sector. But I know we've also got a bunch of data releases this week. What will you be taking a look at?
Yep. So we have GDP on the 30th. We have incomes and outlays and the PCE data on the 31st. And then also on the 30th, we have advanced goods trade balance and wholesale inventories.
And I'll be taking a look at a few this week. We've got more housing data. The FHFA and the S&P Case-Shiller Index both come out actually as we're recording this. So hopefully we'll get a chance to digest that in the next few days. And then the pending home sales index will be released on the 30th as well. And there's some consumer data this week. I know you touched on it when you mentioned the income and outlays and the PCE price index and such, but personal income and personal spending data will come out on the 31st. So we'll get another good data point about the health of the U.S. consumer. But a lot to pay attention to this week, and I'm sure we'll be able to catch up about it next time we record. Omar, I do think that's all the time we've got today, but I look forward to speaking with you on another episode. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast, powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.